The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So welcome along to the football show, where in due course we'll bring you the dulcet tones of Tim Vickery as Brazil and Argentina both draw early doors in this World Cup, and Colombia are in action tomorrow, and Mexico obviously beat Germany, and the Mexican manager is a very impressive man all on his own, has dragged himself up to where he is, really impressive journey. So we will talk to Tim Vickery about all of that, but we are still flush from Harry Kane's late winner for England, which means we're going over to this guy. I guess I wouldn't usually go to a Scotsman about an England game, but I mean, look, we had Planta and here we are. I mean, Pat Nevin, come in, hello.
Hello, how you doing? You found me just arrived in St. Petersburg. I was in Moscow first thing this morning. You're going to talk to the fabulous Tim Vickery in a wee while about Argentina and Mexico. I was at both of those games.
Wow.
And they were astounding. They were absolutely unbelievable. But we watched England tonight, and that was, that's less than unbelievable, let's be fair. Boy, were they lucky. Jeez, oh, they were seriously lucky tonight. And they were really poor. I mean, they had most of the game, but boy, were they poor tonight.
Ah, okay, were they? Well, I'll ask you about Argentina, Iceland and Mexico, Germany. So, let's get your overall sense of England, because what's happening now on BBC television, and don't worry, I'm not inviting you to criticise your colleagues, but there is a real element of scoreboard journalism going on, and so words like resilience and leadership and all this kind of stuff are being talked about. But so you said they're really poor. The first 15-20 minutes, it looked like they were going to score a lot of goals. It looked fine. It was attacking. There was pace. There was lots of good things happening. They scored the early goal. First 20 minutes, they weren't poor then, I presume. You were happy enough what you saw then, from an English point of view, anyway.
No, honestly, I was sitting watching the game with a commentator, Ian Dennis, who I'm doing a lot of games with over here, and Jonathan Pearce, who you know as well. And, you know, everyone was quite happy with the way it had gone in those first 20 minutes. Really lively, getting the chances. It didn't come. But when you're going to have difficult moments, and every game and every tournament, you're going to have difficult moments, difficult times. They were unlucky to lose that penalty, but you know, it was a bit of stupidity from Walker. And then you thought, well, okay, keep on going the way you were going, but they didn't. There was no structure to it after that. And I thought it was massively disappointing. In the second half, there was a serious limited amount of chances. Now, there's a bit of me that thinks, before the tournament, I was saying to as many people would listen, like, do you know, they've not got great creativity in that team. You know, they've not got number 10. So use what you're good at. You know, you're good at pace. You get phenomenal pace in some forward attacking areas. And you're not bad at set pieces. Now, that sounds like damning with faint praise, but you know what? Have a look at set pieces tonight. Let's go two over the set pieces. Harry Kane's a great finisher. But the whole midfield thing and the creativity, it was numb in a vast majority of that kind of second half period. And they got out of jail. There's no doubt. They absolutely got out of jail. I mean, when a lot of people think about it and sit down and consider it. But having said that, hey, look at what happened to Germany. Look what happened to Argentina. Look, yeah. You know, what happened to Brazil. These teams, to be honest, forget resilient England. Resilient the opposition tonight, because they fought and they battled and they chased. But if you're going to win a World Cup, you've got to be a lot better than that. If you're going to get far in the World Cup. And they were 3 minutes, 2 minutes away from absolutely up against the eight ball.
Yeah.
Had they not got that goal tonight.
Yeah, and all the pressure that goes with a bad first result. Yeah. So when they are getting pacey players in behind, when they're on the counter-attack, they look pretty good and there's all that pace and everything. But you use the word numb there to describe them when Tunisia sat back and they were trying to engineer something from midfield. It's hard to see that issue being solved for them over the next couple of weeks.
I don't think it'll be solved in that way, and I have never thought it's going to be solved in that way. I mean, they decided not to take Jack Wilshere. Now, Jack Wilshere's probably the closest they've got to a creative player in that 10 position, but Jack hasn't been playing enough and hasn't been playing well enough, so I absolutely understand it. So there's no point trying to play that way, because there's player teams and England in that position to do that game. So do what you're good at. Play play the one you know, as they used to say in the game. Now, playing the one you know is, you know, get those set pieces and do well for them, and they did that today. Mm. And Harry Kane, to be honest, my thoughts before the tournament were, you know what, first two games, Harry Kane, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not nigh on the top goal scorer in this tournament, because against Panama, and to some degree, surprisingly tonight, after what happened, because Harry only had about two or three touches and two of them were goals, you know, he'll have a load of goals. But when you get after that, you've got a whole different set of problems. So don't go down the same route again. You're slightly concerned about England, but then again, look around the tournament. Everybody's concerned about themselves if you're some of the top teams. I mean, even before that today, watching the Belgian game today, they were okay. They weren't absolutely fantastic. They're against a very average Panama side.
Yeah.
So there's the most wide-open World Cup you've seen for many, many, many years. And I think England, for them, I'm quite saddened for them in a way, because if they had a team that had Lampard, that had Gerrard, that had, you know, Ferdinand, you know, the golden generation, as they're called, walking into this tournament, I think you'd be looking at them now thinking they were favourites, but they've not got that sort of team anymore.
So this team aren't a patch on the golden generation. They're not a more well-balanced kind of group or any of that kind of stuff that's been talked about. They're still not a patch on the golden generation, as ultimately underwhelming as the golden generation were.
And yes, does that matter? It doesn't. In a cup competition, this becomes a cup competition quite quickly. It's not about that. It's about finding a way to win. And I still think England can find a way to win. They've got enough players there that, you know, Harry Kane can score goals. Vardy's got amazing pace. Sterling, who had a quiet game tonight, has got amazing pace. Odd enough, of all the players with a bit of creativity, there was a couple of times tonight, technically you're thinking, right, who's going to go forward and sort of break the line and make a change? I'm watching, it was Harry Maguire who was coming up the left-hand side.
Yeah, every time.
And then, and then the right-hand side, you're having a look, you're thinking, well, John Stones is playing in that position. That's not the players you expect to be there. But it's what was happening. So it looked unstructured. You know, they've actually got the win. They should get the win in that sort of game. But Gareth has got a lot of questions to ask himself. One of the big questions I was asking after about 74, 75 minutes was, right, you're playing the three at the back. Explain why. Because you've only got one guy up against you, and you've got three centre-backs. Okay, Maguire and Stones, drop, you know, go forward. Look, take one of them off, whoever it is, you know, and maybe take Trippier off, move Walker a little bit forward, he'll fly down the right wing there, and bring an extra striker on.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, you know, that sort of, that's not extreme stuff.
No.
I was in Germany last night, and they tried to do exactly the same thing and create a whole bunch of chances. Yeah. England didn't create a bunch of chances tonight. They created one.
Yeah, it was never quite working for them. I mean, they were almost close to creating a chance kind of territory for a lot of it, yeah. Because Tunisia weren't keeping the ball very well for most of that game. So there was no need to have three at the back, as you say. And I don't know, it just had a feel for a lot of that last 20 minutes when it became apparent that Tunisia were deciding, right, we've got something to cling on to here, let's see this one out as best we can. It just had an Iceland feel again. It was like, right, England need to score, let's see what you do. And there was nothing clear-cut created. It was eerily similar vibe.
Yeah, it's tough to play against that. I mean, I've done it many times in my career, particularly international teams know how to do it, the sit-back. Mexico did the same in the last period of the game against Germany. You know, and it's 11 bodies. You know, you need to get through them. You need to be clever enough to get through them. You need to be sophisticated enough to get through them. But even so, it sounds easy, but it's not. It's tough against them. And they are international players. A lot of them are not top international players, but they're international players. So it's not going to be easy to get through them.
Yeah.
But don't hamper yourself by having not enough players going forward. You know, be brave. And England needed a win there. And they got the win, and everyone will say, yeah, we got the win. Yeah, but it was two corner kicks. They were flicked on. Yeah. You know, it's not more than that. That's old school stuff. And that's fine, as long as you play to that. I'm kind of a wee bit saddened for England tonight. Can we mention one guy? I'd love to mention one guy. What a difference Loftus-Cheek made when he came on. He looked as if he had something to add in comparison to Dele Alli, who did the square root of nothing for the vast majority of the game. And I think there's a lot of decisions. And I look at Gareth Southgate now, and he was 2.5 minutes away for the turn-up head on the newspapers here. And do you know what, Gareth? Again, I've said it before this tournament started, you've got some massive decisions you're going to have to make, and you're going to have to make very, very quickly in this tournament. And some of them are not going to be very, very popular, but you're going to have to make them. Don't stick with that system all the time. Certainly don't stick with it as long as you did tonight, because you do that against good teams, you haven't got a chance. You will not win.
Okay. And by the sounds of things, by the sounds of your analysis of the way he just stayed with three at the back when there was really no need to, especially given the circumstances, you'd have some concerns over Southgate's decision-making in-game, if nothing else.
It's really hard. I watch international managers and you're at tournaments and you watch them. You know, it's happening fast for us when we're watching it. When you're inside it and all the pressure's, you know, buzzing around your brain and everything's happening, it feels much, much quicker. The time's going at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And you have to make decisions that are big decisions, that are big calls in the back of your mind. These decisions are going to haunt you or, you know, make you for the rest of your life. They're tough decisions to make. Mm. But that's why you're the international manager and you have to make them. And the great guys, you know, they make them and they look a bit effortless. I mean, I go back to Jack, you know, Jack Charlton, some of the decisions he made, you know, you start... And you look quite laid back about them, but you need to have that ability to make them. And some of them, it's the big unpopular ones now and again you have to make. And I'll give him his due. When he took Dele Alli off and put Loftus-Cheek, I thought, yeah, that's a good one. That's a right good one. Because, you know, Dele Alli is so highly rated, but it was having no impact whatsoever.
Yeah.
That was a right good decision.
Yeah, because
those have to be tactical too.
Yeah, and that's the kind of decision that can be thrown in his face if things go very badly. What the hell are you doing taking off Dele Alli? Kind of a decision.
Yeah, good call. But I don't think it would have much to that because...
Yeah, he was just that bad. Yeah.
I don't know about bad, he just had no impact in the game. But having said that, the other one, the classic one, Harry Kane, I mean, you love him, but he'll always try hard. He'll always do everything he possibly can. Can you remember how many touches he had in the game?
Yeah.
You know, he was so uninvolved in the game. But that's great because he'll score against... You know, he'll score against Tunisia, he'll score against Panama. I'll tell you what, it's going to be a wee bit tougher against Belgium. And as soon as you get beyond that, it's going to be much, much tougher. So big, big decisions coming forward. But that last minute, you know, last couple of minutes, when they got almost certainly season through to the, you know, the next stage. And he's got that gives him a little bit of breathing space. And boy, did he need it.
Yeah, no doubt. So to conclude in England, what are we saying here? Distinctly unimpressed and... Kind of what you expected, or do you see anything in the resilience, leadership, all that, you know, those kind of words which are being thrown around now, which means they might overachieve.
Resilience and leadership, I think I'm with you in that one. No, that's just nonsense.
Yeah,
got a bit lucky. They got absolutely got a bit lucky, and sometimes it's a hell of a good to be lucky, and they got lucky that time. They need to be a little bit better than that. They need to be a lot better than that. But there's enough players there. They've got certain strengths. And if they play to those strengths, you know, they can go, maybe get to the quarterfinals. And quarterfinals is par, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolute par for England. And that's still where they're kind of aiming for. Had they not get that last minute goal, they were looking well under par.
Mm. And maybe one last point as it occurs to me, with all that pace in the team, might in some respects might they be better suited against the better teams, hit them on the counter-attack, try and be relatively solid and together?
Yeah, that's my point. Absolutely my point.
Okay.
I got a lot of grief about it, but I did a piece, an analysis piece saying, do you know, against the better teams, you actually might not play Harry Kane. You may actually, I know he scores lots of goals, but I say you might not play him, you might not start him, or you might, you know, change him at a period of the game. Because against the better teams, you're actually not going to control that midfield. You're going to be under pressure for a good period of time. But what England have got is startling, stunning pace. That's the one area that they're better than almost all the teams. And I mean that, almost all the teams. I mean, Walker's stunning, Sterling's stunning, you know, Rashford is stunning with pace as well. And we know what Jamie Vardy's like. And it might seem old school, but hey, it may well be the old school's the way that gets you through in this one. Because you go and try and play like Spain, you go and try and play like these teams, you're not good enough to do that if you're England.
That's a fascinating dynamic. So say in his heart of hearts, Gareth Southgate feels that. Harry Kane is his captain. And also, it's like what we said about taking off Dele Alli for Ruben Loftus-Cheek, but like times a billion. Like the level of vitriol thrown his way if he were to drop Harry Kane and even explain, look, I love Harry Kane, but we're not going to have much of the ball. We've got lightning pace and I want Vardy to lead that. I want us to be the Leicester City of this World Cup. Even if he did all that, he would be on the Sun newspaper with his head in as a turn up the next day.
it's going to be in the tunnel pen anyway. He was a kick in the backside off it tonight, I'll tell you.
Pat, I'm back with us. So sorry, Pat, just we lost you during that answer. As I get a final thought or two from you, there is no chance ultimately, even if it makes sense in his heart of hearts, that Gareth Southgate can not start Harry Kane, not least given this evening.
You know, it probably, I'm not saying drop him, but guys, you've been great, he scored the two goals tonight. I'm not suggesting that for a second. What I'm suggesting is that there will come a point in this tournament, and maybe Belgium, maybe beyond that, where you think, look, where is our strength? And, you know, it might not even be, you know, take Harry Kane out of the team. It might be dropping a little bit deeper, like he dropped a little bit deeper tonight.
Okay.
But there will come a time, I think, where your strengths are, look, you've got monumental pace. That's where you're better than everyone else. There's not a lot of other areas where England are better than everyone else. And you just play to that. And given the due, tonight they thought, well, okay, we'll play to our strengths, which is dead ball situations, crosses out into the box. You're talking 1980s, 1990s England football. And
yeah.
It worked. You know what? It doesn't matter, as long as it worked. I mentioned Big Jack just a few moments ago. Big Jack found a way to win. And people in Ireland know you find a way, and it doesn't matter which way. So, you know, they move on. Mm. They're slightly spooked by it, but, you know, they've won the game. They'll win the next game. That won't be a problem at all. They'll get through. That's when the decisions have to be made after that.
You mentioned you saw the Germany game. So they lost 1-0 to Mexico. I'm sure a lot of people saw that game. Interestingly, some of the German players conceded after the game that they had not expected Mexico to play on the counter-attack, that wasn't generally how Mexico had played. So they were maybe caught in the hop a touch. How worried should German fans be? They seemed fairly slow and sluggish and ran out of ideas pretty quickly. It was not a good performance.
Fairly slow and sluggish? They were borderline dead. They were awful. I mean, honestly, I was at the game, right, apart from the fact that now and again at a World Cup, something special happens. You go to certain games and it's just like bordering on the religious experience. It's kind of a wee bit like that at this game. The Mexican fans were amazing. They're absolutely fantastic. The tactics, the way they were played, you know that Cruz can't run. You know that Cadeira's run at legs as well. There's not even point mentioning Ozil because you know he's not going to track back. And they just played this breaking game with three players, you know, just sitting beside them. And then breaking off them. They had one player up front, Hernandez, who was great at holding it up and running on behind. Honestly, I don't know how well it showed on TV because I was at the game and watching it. They should have had maybe six or seven in the first half. They were through and the final ball wasn't good enough. It was absolutely stunning. What stunned me more than anything else, that Jurgen Klopp didn't know how to change it and wouldn't change it. It was absolutely amazing. I've never seen a more inadequate, naive German midfield than I've seen in that game because they didn't have the pace. And you need to move something and change something and adapt something. And it's so slow. The game could have been finished, well, before, you know, he made the changes in the second half. And oddly enough, it wasn't him that made the changes. It was Osorio, the Mexican manager, who made the changes and went slightly more defensive. And I understand that, and it worked, so well done him. But before that, it was one of the biggest thumpings tactically you've seen in a long, long time. And certainly the biggest tactical thumping I've ever seen of a German team. And I was talking to the journalist, Rafa Honigstein, at half-time and after the game. And he was saying, yeah, you kind of seen this coming to some degree because they knew there was a complete lack of pace and energy in that team. Now, they've lost the game. They might win the next two. They might get through. Every other top team in the tournament will watch that and think, right, we know where the weakness is and we will capitalise on that. So to take nothing away from the Mexicans, that was great. And, you know, every World Cup that I go to and I cover, I come back with memories. And I promise you now, one of the memories will be walking out of that stadium after game and walking down to the tube station with the Mexican fans. And it was absolutely brilliant. And then we walked onto the tubes. And then they kept on singing all the way. And they sang all the way to Red Square. And it was just fantastic. So it was one of those great, great days. And I was so happy for the Mexicans because the bravery, and as you're talking about Osorio, the manager, he had to be brave to make those decisions. He'd done this one tactical thing during the game, which I mentioned in the commentary after about 5 minutes. I said, he's just left three up at a corner kick. Nobody does that now. Absolutely nobody does that now. But he did, and I think, well, you're either naive or very, very brave, or it turns out unbelievably right. Yeah. It was brilliant. Time and again, they got it and they just broke. And the Germans, they'd left three at the back against three. And they weren't quick enough. Mm. And to see that sort of stuff, and it's one of those things, people talk about tactics and modern tactics. It's not modern tactics. It's just a methodology. Do you know, if you look into the past and find an answer there, that's a good place to look. He looked that into the past and he found an answer, and it worked a treat.
Yeah, well, Hernandez says he's a genius and he's a very interesting fellow. Tim Vickery is going to tell us about him in just a moment. I guess one last point, because I'm going to talk to Tim about Argentina as well. Your Russian experience, Pat? Anything? And you've been in quite a few tournaments now.
Yeah, and I'd really like to shout as loud as I possibly can all the garbage I was told about what Russia was going to be like before I turned up here. Absolute, utter nonsense. Incredibly friendly people. A really modern country. Fantastically well organised. Now, I'm not going to go into the political stuff because I know the political problems there, but the amount of warnings and fear and stuff, I would say to anyone, visit Moscow, go there. Visit St. Petersburg. Fantastic place. We've got this terrible attitude, certainly in the UK. We've been sold a lot of propaganda at what it's like over here. It's so dangerous. Nonsense. Absolute rubbish. This place has been absolutely brilliant. The people have been brilliant. The organisation, the structure has been brilliant. It's moved on so much in the last 10 years since the last time I was here. I've been here 4 or 5 times, but it's moved on so much. Now, there are problems. I don't hide that for a minute, politically, and I could go on for a long time about them. But do not be fearful of Russia. It's fabulous at the moment, and they are producing a great tournament.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Enjoy. Thanks so much for your time this evening.
Pleasure, guys.
Off the ball.
We're going now to the Azteca Stadium, and we can now join Barry Davis.
Oh, superb! The taste of French wine.
Laudrup seems to ghost past defenders as though they don't exist. This is going to be one of the goals of the tournament. Magnificent! The boy's a genius.
Ball in the area. Lineker!
Different class.
It's made of 18-carat gold, and the man who receives it is Diego Maradona of Argentina. The world's greatest player receives the world's most important football prize.
It's been our pleasure to bring this World Cup to you. Thank you for sharing it with us. We've loved it all, and we hope you have too. Cheerio.
What chance we have a repeat of 86 for Argentina? Slim and none is the feeling after the weekend, but we will get to all that. Tim Vickery, hello.
Hello, very good evening to you. How are you doing? Do you like my little World Cup wall chart? Can you see my World Cup wall chart behind you there?
It's absolutely stunning. A question I've been asking everybody who comes on, where are you? I don't even know what continent you're on.
I'm in the country of the yellow shirt here.
Okay.
So I'm in, that doesn't mean Sweden. That means I'm in Rio, I'm in Brazil.
Okay, very good. Were you tempted to go? Did you think about going, or were you never going to go?
I thought that one of my clients was going to take me, so I waited for that one, and then it didn't happen. And fine, you know, I'm more than happy with what I got in life. I have no complaints.
The comforts of home. We've been talking to Pat Nevin. He's been on, so we've kind of done the England chat with him. Do you want to give a brief word on what you made of it?
I thought it was great, and I would have said that even had the goal not gone in at the end. Uh-huh. I thought it was a very, very impressive performance. First, I want to have a go at the North Africans, just like Egypt. And I've been seeing this from a lot of North African sides. There's the occasional exception, I think perhaps Algeria last time around. But I've been thinking this since Morocco in 86. They can really play. They can really play, but they just don't want to.
Right.
And I don't know what it is about the mentality. But that was a difficult game against opponents who aren't going to make you look good. And England had a terrific first half, should have put the game to bed. Mm. Conceded a soft penalty. I have no problems about the penalty. For me, it was a penalty. I don't have any problems about it. But what really impressed me was the bit that everyone seems to be moaning about, which was the second half. Because the second half, England managed to keep controlled possession and didn't fall into the trap that Tunisia want you to fall into. Because they've only got one idea They've got talent to do much more, but they have one idea. And that one idea is you make a mistake and then they go quickly. And there was hardly a mistake in the second half in that controlled possession that England enjoyed. Kept probing. It was difficult because you're against an opponent that has 10 and sometimes 11 players behind the ball. And in the end, I think got what they deserve. But I thought it was a bright performance from a promising young side. And I especially like the fact that they didn't panic in possession and make mistakes, because that's exactly what Tunisia were waiting for.
Okay, that is definitely a more positive slant than Pat Nevin. So it's good to get the counterbalance.
Well, Pat's the other side of Hadrian's wall. So,
he is. He has
what are you going to expect?
So I guess we want to chat to you about the South American sides thus far. Brazil, I mean, very curious to know how the performance was received over there. It was a 1-1 draw against the Swiss. I think most people sat down to watch this game last night and first 15, 20 minutes, including the Coutinho goal, thought, this is great stuff. And then, well, I'm curious for your explanation about what went wrong. I've seen everything from some kind of complacency to, well, they just sat much deeper than they're in the habit of sitting as a team.
Undoubtedly true. And it's hard to understand why that took place. Haven't seen them do that in the 2 years that Chichi has been coaching the side. They've never done that. Don't know why it happened. And it concerns me because Chichi identified this as a mistake in the post-match press conference. So you're thinking, well, why wasn't this changed during the game? No, you got even the halftime interval, but they went deep so early. I understand they have terrific pace on the counter-attack. So, you know, there's a feeling that they can win the game on the counter-attack. But when your central midfield trio includes Felipe Coutinho and Paulinho, you don't want to be in your half of the field.
No.
Coutinho isn't a box-to-box midfielder. There will be problems with his marking, and that's the sector that the Swiss employed to get a foothold back in the game. And Paulinho, between the two penalty boxes, he doesn't do a great deal. What where you want him is where he was in the first 20 minutes.
He's not a great footballer, Petty. Like you want him trying to pass the ball in front of you. The last thing you want is him running at you.
Well, yes. But where you do want him is when you're throwing men forward and you're getting balls into that box, because his timing of the runs into the box is then so good. And he nearly got the first goal. But if he doesn't do that, he's not doing much that's outstanding.
Yeah.
So if you have Paulinho and Coutinho in that trio, you want to be in the opponent's half anyway, especially when you're up against a side where the centre forward is very slow. Mm-hmm. Why let them near the goal? It doesn't make any sense to me at all. Mm. There's a lot of fuss in Brazil about the push for the goal and the whole VAR thing, and the Brazilian FA making a formal complaint to FIFA. But I think it's all a red herring. I think Brazil invited that upon themselves. On the one hand, I put this down to first night nerves. I think it's always rash to judge teams by what happens in the first game in a World Cup.
Yeah.
But on the other, I'm a little concerned. This has been something that's concerned me all along with the lack of a captain. And Chichi has this rotating captain philosophy. And when he took over, he didn't have a natural captain. So what he did was he changed it every game. It was Marcel, the left back, yesterday. It'll be someone else against Costa Rica. And I do think that there's a danger there that you have a lack of an established leadership structure on the field. Mm. Who is there? Who is the leader there on the field to get them forward? Who is the leader there on the field to sort Neymar out?
Well, you're echoing
to stop him dropping deep and just doing all the showboating and trying to get the fouls that he whinges and cries about, but he's trying to attract them.
Yeah.
When he loses focus on keeping the ball fizzing, and when he does that, the collective display of the team really suffers. And I think there's a lack of a leadership structure on the field to put these things right. So a little bit concerned by that, although I thought the first 20 minutes were terrific.
Yeah, for sure. You've beautifully segued a whole number of strands there for me, which is fantastic. So on the captain situation, you're echoing the thoughts of Arsene Wenger, who on beIN Television was making that very point. And look, maybe it's the classical thing that an older gentleman says as they get older, and will be saying similar things in years to come. But look, Arsene Wenger is working day to day with young people, and he said, you don't have natural captains anymore in the younger generation. I don't know why. And he also added, maybe because a player is now a star. For example, Neymar's a superstar. The guy's 170 million followers on social media. Even if I'm Neymar's captain, he'll do what he wants. And you've tied up those two points neatly. Like, of course, Neymar is not, he doesn't seem to be a player who comes back in pristine condition necessarily. He may need games. But regardless of that, just the self and the level of indulgence here. I mean, the level of self-regard and the haircut. And I know that's, I hate to be the person who's bringing up a player's haircut. Like, I feel embarrassed even saying that, because it's not important. But when you just tie it in with the overall performance, you use the word showboating. Like, this was an exercise in brand Neymar. This was it was contemptible kind of a performance from Neymar. And I'm wondering, is he above criticism on Brazilian television and in Brazilian media? Are they watching this and saying, this is dreadful, this is just counterproductive times a billion?
He's not above criticism. They can be very, very cruel to him. But they can also draw the wrong conclusions. And one conclusion that they've leapt at, rather nationalistically, is look at these filthy Swiss doing a rotation of fouls against him. Now, it's clear that the Swiss were terrified of him. You saw that right at the start when the fella picked up a yellow card for hauling him back. Brazil, I think, with the positioning of Felipe Coutinho as a midfielder, they've made use of that quite well, because now there's a proximity between the two. And the space for Coutinho to have that shot broke the deadlock came because the Swiss defence are so concerned with the Neymar there. So Brazil are using that in a way. But a lot of the fouls, a lot's been made of the number of fouls that were conceded against him, and it's the highest since, I think, Alan Shearer in the 1998 World Cup.
Yeah, 11.
But he wants those fouls. He is drawing those fouls. And then he does the, and I've seen this time after time, he does those the acrobatic dives when he goes up to go down.
Yeah.
And this irritates the opposition. And they're then even more inclined to kick him. He then becomes irritated, and he becomes a prisoner of the mood of the game that he's created. And he's complaining and he's yapping away instead of moving the ball. We've said all along in these chats that one of the key things about Brazil in this World Cup is the extent to which Neymar's individual ability can be placed at the disposition of the collective. And yesterday, it clearly wasn't enough. There's too much showboating going on, far from goal. Having said that, look at the last minute. Brazil have a free kick from range. Everyone is expecting him to go for goal.
Yeah.
And then he surprised us all. He didn't. Clever little dink into the box. The Swiss defence weren't expecting it, and it nearly produced a goal. So he does these wonderful things, and he does these wonderful selfless things at times. Mm. But he's such a mixed bag. You worry game after game after game, because once you get into the knockout stages, you play like that again and you could lose.
I know it'll come back to haunt me, but I just don't. I don't like Neymar as a player. I don't fully rate him the way I know I should. And the chip into the box, I mean, it was reminiscent of Barcelona against PSG when he hit that chip in and we thought he was going to shoot. And to be honest, those moments surprise me when they happen with them. Can I move on to Argentina before the clock really gets in trouble with us?
Sure.
So in our chats, because I don't see much of Argentina, because honestly, there's a billion different sporting events to watch in my life, and I don't get to see everything. So I said it to Kev earlier, we checked in with Kevin Kilbane in Moscow earlier, and I said, so we've been talking to Tim Vickery all this time, and, you know, he says defensively they're suspect and they're massively reliant on Neymar. And I kind of thought...
Messi.
I kind of thought, I'm sure they are, and I'm sure they're bad at the back. But I thought, in the same way that Real Madrid are bad at the back, they're not actually that bad. And look, I know they're reliant on Messi, but, come on, they've got so many other players. And they're like, okay, Aguero's goal notwithstanding. I mean, it was beyond a cliche. I actually couldn't believe the extent to which these two cliches were true.
Oh, Joe Malloy, you have little faith. How many times?
I know, but it was quite unbelievable.
Every attack, and there weren't any attacks in the second half. The second half was attack versus defence. But every Iceland attack in the first half, you thought had a chance of ending up in a goal. Plan A is give the ball to Messi and hope he can do something. Plan B is also give the ball to Messi and hope he can do something. There isn't anything else. Mm. The only surprise for me about Argentina is that people have been surprised, because in contrast with Brazil, after going ahead, did something radically different to everything they've done over the last 2 years. Argentina did exactly the same. That it has been exactly the level of Argentina's performances since the current coach took over and before as well. And the current coach, there's an expression they use over here, is like a blind man in a shootout. He just doesn't know which way to turn.
Right.
And they've got this crunch game coming up against Croatia. It looks as if, from the training sessions, he's going to go back to a back three. Now, he started off with a back three. He abandoned the back three when the defence collapsed against Nigeria in a friendly. They'll be playing Nigeria again with more at stake soon, with a lot at stake soon. But he abandoned the back three then, and then he went with a back four. It is now, it's certainly, I don't know if he's going to line up this way, but he's certainly been looking at it in training. He's looking at a back three again. So you never know, because the World Cup is like time speeded up.
Sure.
During the course of the campaign, sometimes teams suddenly click. And it could happen with Argentina, although those defensive deficiencies, I think, are always going to be there, no matter what system he plays.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are still on page one. And we've already had the first game of the World Cup.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. I think the hope when we talked to you was that maybe Sampaoli would get them together in camp and form partnerships and work in them together. And it might come to some kind of fruition. But, geez, it hasn't.
The thing that amazed me, the one thing that did surprise me about Iceland is that one of the things, and you expect a high line from Sampaoli, and he's decided that he can't do that. I understand that. But you expect two against one situation down the flanks. And they try to funnel everything through the middle, exactly where Iceland was so strong. And so you have to criticise, I think, Messi for overdoing that. Although, again, he shows a little bit of tactical brilliant genius. But the moment when Iceland are down to 10 men, because a man's gone off injured and they're waiting to make their substitution, it's the right-sided midfielder. He sees it. Where'd he go? He fills that space. And it's from there that he finds a space for the cross behind the line that brings the penalty.
Yeah.
That was a brilliant piece of thinking football from Messi, amid not a lot of thinking football and continual attempts to thread the ball through the eye of a needle.
Messi, in his own way, I mean, it's hard because Ronaldo kind of did something so extraordinary, but Messi, I thought, certainly in the first 25 minutes, 30 minutes, looked very alive. And like the game kind of came alive whenever he got on the ball. And it was almost like, I mean, the Argentinian players, I said to Kev earlier, it was like they didn't believe they could score unless he had been involved in the move. There was no intent almost beyond eventually getting the ball back to him. But I thought he looked much sharper than this time 4 years ago, that's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, and that has always been the big hope, that with Barcelona tying up the Spanish league early, with them being knocked out of the Champions League at the quarterfinal stage for the third year running, that he would have more gas in the tank. And I think he does. But, you know, they're up against it now. You know, Croatia have been one of the most impressive sides so far. If they lose that one, they're still in the hunt, but it really is backs to the wall time.
Yeah. Before you go, Germany obviously lost to Mexico, an amazing thing for Mexico, and an earthquake was registered in the country, which is pretty impressive in its own right. Just people may not be aware of the backstory of Juan Carlos Osorio. Man, he's an impressive fella.
Yeah, he's certainly impressive given the fact that he looks a lot like Stan Laurel, which is unusual, I think, for a coach. And he makes these little notes in his, and often I've seen him, especially when he was in Colombia, he makes these little notes and he hands them to it. There's a kind of shuttle system where the captain receives these little notes that he makes with his tactical changes. Okay. He's one of those restless, studious types. And the fascinating thing about this game, the Germany game, was it had the potential to go wrong. And he likes to front load his team. He likes two wingers. So he likes his two wingers and a central striker. And there have been times when he's front loaded embarrassingly. And during the centenary Copa America 2 years ago, it was in California somewhere. It was a home game for Mexico against Chile in the semi-final. They lost 7-0.
Right.
Chile just walked through them. And then last year, they go to the Confederations Cup. They play Germany B, you know, the German B side that they sent to the Confederations Cup. Exactly the same. He front-loaded his side. The Germans just walked through it. The game was over as a contest inside the first 10 minutes. Now, he said after yesterday's game that he spent 6 months preparing for this one. So he wasn't going to get caught in the same trap again.
Yeah.
Although he loves his central striker and his two wingers. And he used that absolutely brilliantly. He kept them up. You know, the three up to keep the Germans honest, and when the Germans weren't honest, bang, they were there behind them.
Yeah.
I was a little bit scared with the substitutions that he made towards the end when he took off some of his pace. I could see that going horribly wrong. But a famous victory, and you know, Mexico with the I've seen them beat Brazil many times. You know, so that they are capable of huge things. It's a massive country and a football crazy country that perhaps suffers from its isolation over the years.
Yeah.
with a little bit of wind in their sails, I can't see them winning it. But, you know, and what a and perhaps they'll be victims of their own hype after just having beaten Germany. That's something perhaps to worry about. But while Osorio is coach, with his central striker and his two wingers, they're always going to be fun to watch.
Well, I hadn't realised his backstory, that he was a player, career ends at 26, and then, according to the New York Times, he moves to the US, he's an illegal immigrant, he works in construction, and then he works in the food service, then he gets his legal status back, then completes a degree in exercise in Connecticut, then sold all his belongings to go to Liverpool, where he went into John Moores University, and he used to borrow a ladder in Liverpool and stick it over the wall and watch the Roy Evans, Gerard Houllier Liverpool train, and then got some jobs in sports science in MLS, and then went Man City, and kept pushing and learning and pushing and learning. Here he is. There should be a movie about this guy.
Yeah, and for a Stan Laurel lookalike, what a fine mess he's put Jürgen Lowe in.
In short, are you enjoying the World Cup? It's taken along very nicely, isn't it?
It's ticking along wonderfully. Well, I can't believe it's only been 5 days. Yeah. It seems like I've been living this for a lifetime. God knows how we're going to get through to the end. You know, it's going to kill me before the end. But I'm enjoying it, especially when the spoilers get beat at the end. I love it when the spoilers get beat at the end. The likes of Egypt, the likes of Tunisia, they're capable of so much more. Yeah. It is Einstein's definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again and thinking and expecting different results. Yeah. When on earth are they going to learn? Surely now, surely after what just happened, because they're so skillful on the ball and they've got physique, they've got quality, they just have this dreaded fear of taking any risks. And there is obviously a direct relationship between risk and reward. Mm. If they keep risking nothing, they're going to get nothing back.
Yeah. Great stuff, Tim, as ever. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well, do it then.
Come to you again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Oh!